Andrews lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a preview edition of Bison Report Radio Podcast. I am your host, publisher of the Bison Report, Ross Uglum. Trevor Gebhardt, our lead football analyst, is going to join us right after we hit the news, and we don't have a whole lot of news this week outside of we just want to, and we've done a little bit of this on social, but we just want to send our thoughts and our prayers out to the family of Landon Solberg. That entire neighborhood of West Fargo, South Fargo, anybody that had a chance to meet him, be a part of his fight, we just want to say that, Landon, we're going to miss you, and that your fight against cancer inspired each and every one of us. And we just wanted to make special mention of that, because he's been so important to Bison Nation over the last 2 years that it just – it's something that absolutely needs to be said. The other thing that needs to be said is that we want everybody listening to this podcast to know that, number one, both myself and Nate Zastro have made a pledge for every new Bison Report subscriber that we have over the next month. He and I are both going to donate $5 to Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer. So if you've ever, if you want to join Bison Report, now would be a great time. And if you don't, that's fine too. If you go to my Twitter account or to my Facebook page, there is a link right there to just directly donate to Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer. And I cannot possibly think of a better time to do that than this week, having, Landon at the top of mind and in our hearts. So that's something that I just wanted to address at the top of the show. And now we'll get into some football. Trev, buddy, how are we doing?
Doing good, man. I hit a workout right before this. I don't exactly smell the greatest, which I know you can't hear. I mean, get through the computer.
Right.
But it's always good to get some blood flow, man.
Yeah, we're, that's the beautiful thing about not having to do this live. You're in North Dakota and I'm in, you're in South Carolina and I'm in North Dakota, so we don't have to deal with this. I want to talk to you a little bit about the game that you were involved in, because according to North Dakota State play-by-play man Jeff Culhane, friend of the show, this is the highest-ranked non-conference game in the Fargo Dome since number 3 Montana came into Fargo in 2014. And that is, of course, one of the years you played. So I'd like to ask you a little bit about that game, kind of things that you remember, things that, kind of were – led up into the hype of that game, and what was it like having a top 5 opponent come to Fargo when it was a non-conference game?
So, I mean, that game in particular, I have two vivid memories. One, our offense played absolutely atrociously bad. So I guess my vivid memory is really the next week of practice, because Coach Polisek was not exactly happy with us. Based off our execution, Adam Keller, I want to say, broke the school record for field goals. So I think he had more field goals than he does toes on his right foot. For those people counting, he's got 4 on his kicking foot. I'm sure you've probably seen that story if you're listening to this. And then my high school quarterback, Matt Hermanson, and my high school football coach, his dad was my high school football coach, and Matt was a safety for Montana. So that was pretty cool to get to play against him. I didn't get a chance to go really one-on-one against him much. I got to block him a few times. Proud to say I won more than I lost, so that was sweet. But as far as hype goes, I mean, at that point, at that point in the whole deal, I mean, we had already had a three-peat. We had already had game day come twice. Nothing really fazed us or got us, amped up. It was just kind of another week. and we just had a task at hand. I would say the one that really brings up fun memories is the Youngstown State game, which I want to say they were number three in 2012. And they beat Pitt earlier that year. I think I've referenced it before on the pod here. But we absolutely bolt raced them out of the Fargo Dome. That was pretty cool. That's when things started to change. And you noticed a significant difference in the fan support, just our level of confidence overall. But yeah, though, I want to say both of those schools, Youngstown in 12 and then Montana in 14, which you referenced, they were both number three.
Right on, right on. So I want to ask you a little bit about Jake Mayer. If you've had a chance to see him play, largely credited with UC Davis's 10-win season a year ago, is certainly, you know, a guy who's all around the All-American lists, a guy that is right up there in the Walter Payton discussion for FCS's top offensive player. And what I want to kind of point out is just what a striking difference there is in the level of quarterback. And it's not just because Jake is good. It's because you really had three either bad or inexperienced or both quarterbacks, you know, playing prior to this. Butler's QB was nothing to write home about. Zimmerman was obviously the backup to a pretty average FCS quarterback, you know, kind of in general for UND. And then Pat Kehoe, that guy can't get out of his own way at Delaware. And he's kind of bringing that team down, right? I would say he's at the very best a net neutral there. But this is a guy in Jake Mayer that I think is capable of, you know, putting the team on his back. And it's just such a different dynamic from the three quarterbacks that they've faced. How much does the defense have to kind of step up this week and understand what they're getting into?
Well, anytime you're facing a guy that you know is a Walter Payton-worthy type player, you know, whether he achieves that or not, I'm skeptical, to be honest. That's not to discredit his body of work to date. I think he's more than earned that preseason title of a Walter Payton candidate coming into this year. So I did get to watch him play a couple games in the playoffs last year. Those are the only games I've actually seen him play, and he throws a pretty dang good ball. He can pick you apart if you let him. But again, I don't think he has seen the level of defense like Code Green on a consistent basis. He does play in the Big Sky, which traditionally is not a defense-heavy league. So scouts will be watching. I think they'll pay close attention to how he performs in this environment, which historically does not bode well for quarterbacks the first time they come in. I don't know. I think they need to be very focused and assignment alignment. Just be in their spot on time. Just make sure they're playing their zones, getting their reads, and just not letting Jake Mayer look them off, because he has those type of capabilities. Do I think he's at the level to be able to, you know, throw for three bills and four touchdowns? I don't think so. And I don't know if he has the arsenal or the matchups to do that on Saturday. But again, like I said, if you're not focused or ready to play and you've had a bad week of practice, this is a type of guy that could make you look bad and he'll make you pay. So I think 20 points would be expected with a guy like this. He's going to get his, but getting to that 30 to 40 point deal, I don't think you're going to see that like they are commonly used to seeing. And I'm basing that off of really just looking at numbers against Cal. Nothing striking there. Cal, to be quite honest, Chip Kelly hasn't done what he did in the past. I think the game has caught up to what he did when he was at Oregon. So if Jake Mayer wasn't able to pick them apart, I'm hard-pressed to believe he can do that on Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, North Dakota State is so good in the defensive backfield. They'll probably have the best DBs that Mayer's seen. And I'll tell you, one guy that they won't miss is Keelan Doss. They're going to be plenty pleased that Keelan is no longer with the Aggies. That's for certain. And, you know, I think this is going to be really a chance to notice or figure out whether or not, you know, who deserves the credit last year. Did Jake Mayer prop up Keelan Doss? Did Keelan Doss prop up Jake Mayer? Or was it some sort of combination of the two? You always want to kind of notice that kind of deal when you've got a stud wide receiver or a quarterback that leaned on a stud wide receiver. And when the stud goes, you know, does the quarterback's play drop off tremendously, or does he just keep on moving? Like, frankly, I got to give Taryn Christian a lot of credit. His level of play did not drop off dramatically after losing Goddard and Wenneke, as plenty of people, myself kind of included, anticipated. So that's something to definitely watch with Jake Mayer. You said you had a chance to watch you know, UC Davis a little bit in the playoffs last year. Had a chance to maybe just watch some highlights this year. Do you buy the number four ranking? I mean, do you really think that this is the fourth best team in the country?
Kind of a loaded question. Right now, probably. I mean, because for me, it's like, who do you put in there? You could justify other bodies of work to surpass them. But again, it's kind of like NDSU. I mean, they're the two-time defending national champions. I know they lost a lot, but it's kind of like, how do you, unless you have a completely, completely different team and you have no idea what you're getting, how do you take a team that's number one or has been number one the past 2 years and then drop them lower? Same thing with UC Davis. They were, what, a quarterfinal team last year. Was on the road at Eastern, lost to him by what, about a score. Eastern goes on to play in the national title game. You return a Walter Payton type worthy quarterback. Obviously, when you have a player like that, you're going to get a lot of preseason hype. Have they lived up to that bill? I can't really say yes definitively. But again, have they been so bad to where you can knock them off that ranking? I don't think so. So long term, I think it'll show, and I think Saturday will really show it, because their only loss is at Cal. You know, granted, it was two scores. Cal's not very good. It was the first game. They had a lot of time to prepare for them. Then they go to San Diego and barely beat them. The Toreros are kind of a hard one to gauge because they play in the Pioneer League, but they win all the time. So it's like, are they for real or are they not? And then they go and put a boat race on Lehigh last week at home for their first home game. So I think this will be their first true real test. You know, whether they pass that or not, I think you're going to start to see the next few weeks in their schedule. They go home against Montana and at UND. I think you're going to see them fall off a bit. So right now, yeah. Long-term, top 10, I think, for the Aggies will be tough.
All right. Let's jump to our first interview of the week. And I had a chance, and this is something that this will come out probably on Friday. This is something that if you watch BRTV, you've probably already had a chance to see, and that is North Dakota State wide receiver Phoenix Sproles.
Bison sophomore receiver Phoenix Sproles. Phoenix, how are we doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. I want to ask you a little bit about your development, because you were a guy last year that they felt like they needed, and you didn't, you know, get your four games, and you kind of got into a situation like Easton had with RJ, where the quarterback gets to redshirt, but you gotta go. So tell me a little bit about your 2018 season.
Yeah, so 2018 season, you know, coming in, obviously everyone wants to play. You're a freshman, you want to just get accommodated with the offense and kind of just learn your role your first year. And my role really was to come in heavier personnels, and then make plays, whether it was blocking or pass play or something like that. So just coming in, being told, you know, not going to be a redshirt freshman, so I knew I had to step up, so I just wanted to make plays as best as I could.
I got to ask you, have you been pushing it all to return? Because you were a heck of a returner in high school. Have you been giving the special teams coaches a little bit of grief about that?
So, of course, they started me off with special teams, punt return, kickoff return. It's funny because I actually blew my chances on kickoff return out of practice. Kickoff, I've never done that in high school, but I was trying to hear cold practice. Involves kids hitting the face mask right in my face in front of the whole team. Everyone just made fun of me, and I was like, I told Coach, that's not for me. But punt return, you know, I actually haven't given that so much thought just because just learning receiver was hard for me already my first year.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not going to worry about all that yet. Let me just get my feet dipped in the water a little bit here with receivers. So, but I'd be open to punt return here in the future.
People see your last name, they expect you to return kicks. So, that's obvious. Maybe not the most productive year from a receptions, yards, et cetera, standpoint, but I have to feel like that experience was valuable.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, obviously I think it was 5 catches for 35 yards my whole freshman year last year. You know, I obviously didn't get the ball a lot, but again, that was on me as well too. I didn't have as much confidence as I did that I have now. But being behind Darius Shepherd last year, him teaching me all the little things, really helped me to be where I'm at now with, I think, probably more catches than I had all last year with 6 catches and double my yards from last year already. So I got to give credit to Darius and Easton for helping me develop my freshman year.
And what was it like playing with two guys that have literally a decade of combined experience, 2 fifth-year seniors, both of whom are in the NFL right now? Yeah. I mean, how much of a blessing is that to a freshman wide receiver to play with a quarterback of that level? And honestly, too, because Shep is – you guys are similar in body type. You know, you're not 6'4". You're not Jake Winicky.
Oh, sir. Yeah, so, you know, I'm very blessed to have been put in that position. Being able to play with Easton and Shep, being able to pick their brains about the offense and just how to be a Bison, really. Darius, I had countless talks with Darius. He was there for me. Same with Easton. And they're just two big role models that, you know, knowing that they're going to graduate, someone had to step up in the receiving area. So I tried to bring that role and try to step up.
Let's kind of transition into the spring and the summer. Easton is gone and Shep is gone. So you two things happen. First of all, you have to take somewhat of a leadership role, or maybe a full-on leadership role. Obviously, Christian's been here for 1 year longer than you, but you kind of move into that leadership role, and then there is a question at quarterback. I would assume you had a pretty good idea about how that was going to go because you're roommates with Trey, but Zeb's no joke. I mean, that kid comes in from Iowa State, played in some big-time football games. So how did the spring kind of go for you guys? Because this was going to be an obvious spring of transition, climbing to Ents, Easton to whoever, you know, and then even the receiver room, Shep had to kind of pass the torch.
Yep, So yeah, just like you said, Zeb was a dude. He was a dude. He went to Iowa State. Heck of a talented kid. And Trey had to compete. Trey, Noah, and Zeb, they all had to compete for that quarterback spot. So they were going at it each and every day. Receiving-wise, one step left, I knew me and Christian were the only receivers that had notable snap time last year. So I knew it's me and him. We got to pick it up. We got to pick up where Darius, Dallas, and Dez left off last year. So we just picked it up in the spring. It was a compete. We were competing every single day. Young guys were pushing me. Same guys in my class. Some other guys that were older pushing Christian as well. So it's still competitive. To this day, it's still competitive. Everyone's trying to play. So just in the spring, you could just see people elevate their game a little bit. And that's what I saw with Trey. I saw him become a different player.
How good can Christian be? That is a beast. That's a dude.
Christian, one of my best friends, I give him a lot of credit. I think he can be one of the best to ever come out of here. He's 6'4", can flat out fly down the field. He's a redshirt sophomore right now, so he still has 2 more years to develop. He's only going to get better. He's only going to get better, and I'm scared for the opponents. I don't want to sound cocky, but myself, Christian, Zach, Jimmy, up and coming guys that we have a lot to prove this year, and I think we can get up to those standards.
You ever see Zach and Chris and go, man, if I was 6'4", I'd be something.
Oh my God. I've been telling. So in practice, we'll have, you know, when those two go out, we'll call it like whatever personnel, but we'll call it like tall trees because they're all just 6'4 and just towering, and I'm just like left behind. And then I'm just looking up to them in the huddle like this. I'm just like, how? Like, how are you guys doing this at 6'4", 6'6"? So that's cool.
When did you kind of figure it out in the fall that Trey was going to be the guy?
You know, personally, I thought since summertime Trey was going to be the guy. Just how he led all of our team practices during the summer. Motivating guys, breaking down all the huddles for weightlifting during the summer, just speaking to all of us. So that's when I knew. I knew before that too. Just after Easton left, I knew Trey was going to be the guy. That was just seeing him outwork other people, seeing him stay after hours, being in here watching film on his iPad. He's got tons and tons of notebooks full of notes. Some skills Easton instilled in him as well too. So I knew Trey was going to be that guy. He just had to go out and compete, and he did his thing.
Kind of rare, I think, for a couple of second-year guys to take this level of control. Do you credit that to your coaches? Do you credit that to even your upbringing or Easton, Darius, guys that kind of instilled that in you? I mean, how has this happened? Because you're one of the top offenses in the country, and it's a bunch of kids.
Yeah. So, like you said, I'm going to credit just our program. We always talk about next man up. If I get injured, hope I don't. But if I get injured, the next guy, he's going to be ready, just as prepared as me or even more prepared. We know it's not about ourselves. It's about the team. So, you know, once Easton left, it's pick up. Someone's got to pick it up. After Shep left, someone's got to pick it up. So just that next man up mentality here, we instill it on the Bison.
Antonio Brown in the news, guys like Terrell Owens, Chad Ochocinco in the past, receivers, and I think part of it, you have to be that way to be competitive, but you want the football.
Right.
9 guys catch a pass against UND, and 10 guys catch a pass against Delaware. Nobody catches more than 3. Mm-hmm. How do you guys balance that out of each other and not get hungry or bordering on almost selfish, but still, like, you want to make plays?
Yeah, for sure. Just like you said, you know, receivers, we are greedy. We do want the ball. You know, seeing guys get six catches for 120 yards, 4 touchdowns a game, you know, that's fun and all, but, you know, that's just not our offense, and I knew that coming in. I made that decision, and I'll stick by it every single time. You know, we run the ball as well, heavily, which is fine because we're going to do it, and we're going to do it right. And all of our receivers, we're taught differently. We block different. I just think we're a different breed. Just how nasty we block, and just how, like, when our name's called, we're going to make that play. So it's just up to our offensive coordinator. If we get the ball 10 times, we get the ball 10 times. If we get it once, we get it once. We're going to get the W, though.
So nobody in your recruitment told you you were going to get 12 targets a game?
No. No.
So what do you think your guys' upside is? Because I think upside is something that gets thrown around with a group this young. How much further is there to go? Because you're still scoring in the 30s per game.
I think honestly, we haven't even surfaced what we can actually do as an offense. We've had glimpses of it here and there, but I don't think we even used all of our backs. We have so many running backs that can do so many electric plays. We haven't used all of our tight ends. We have, I think, one of the best tight end corps in the nation. And then receiving-wise, we haven't even scratched our surface on receiving-wise either. We've had, you know, little shot plays here and there. But, you know, me and Christian, Zach, and Jimmy, we haven't really taken it for a ride yet. And, you know, we're just licking our chops like we're ready to go. So
I want to ask you about that tight end group just real quick, because I wrote something about them last week. Yep. You've got, you know, you have the ability to come out in 13 personnel. Well, all of a sudden, Ben's at fullback and Josh is playing X or whatever. Do you feel like they cut into your playing time almost? Or, I mean, just how versatile does it make you guys to, like I said, come out in 13 or 12 or whatever, and all of a sudden it's 4 wide set or it's a heavy set?
Right. So, yeah, first of all, our tight ends are just crazy athletes. Most of them, I think, played basketball in high school. So, you know, jump balls in the end zone or like boxing out defenders to make a pass. Like, they're built for that. So, and having them to be able to be in the backfield is going to throw some defenses off a little bit. And I just think it's cool how Coach Roll manipulates their opponent's defenses by using our tight ends. And I just think it's really cool. And I, you know, obviously, you know, they're playing all over the place. And, like, 13 personnel, we might have one receiver out there. But that play, it can look like it's going to a tight end, but it's really going to a receiver. So it's just some trickery Coach Roll has up his sleeve.
Yeah, I think Coach Entz mentioned in his press conference they do it because it used to drive him nuts when he coached defenses was with multiple faceted tight ends. Last question here. What have you seen on film from UC Davis, their defensive backs, their defensive scheme, and kind of how do you anticipate this one going on Saturday?
Yeah, so they're a more physical back-end team, so corners are a little more physical than what we've seen these past 3 weeks. They got some bigger corners. I think their boundary corner is 6'190", so he's got some size to him. They're going to be more hands-on than what we've seen this week. A lot of cover three, a lot of man, and I think they're going to go man a lot this week because obviously our run offense.
You're single high, you get made in the box,
Yes, sir. So I'm going to try and pack the box, stop the run, but that's just, I don't think it's going to work. We're going to throw the ball too, so it's all with cultural things.
All right, thanks, Phoenix.
Yep.
I want to thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making Phoenix available. And, of course, we want to thank Phoenix for his time. That was a lot of insightful information. Not a lot of kids, you know, go for 11 or 12 minutes on an interview, but he was really fun to talk to, and I think he did an excellent job. Alonzo Gilliam, 5.2 yards per carry, keeping him honest. I think that's a really underrated, part of UC Davis's offense is just how much how effective Jake Mayer can be because you have to kind of pay attention to the running game.
This guy, I think, is probably a little bit, I mean, obviously biased, so I'm obviously looking at it from a green and gold lens, but I think this guy is probably too top heavy in terms of carries, to be honest. I don't know if you can have a guy, because if you look at some of their stats as far as like attempts, he's got 54 attempts on the season. Their next most is something like 10. I don't know how you can rely on a guy that much against a quality of defense like NDSU. Unless he's a dude, unless you got a guy that's a dude, like I've referenced a couple times, like Shakir Bell, or even before that, the running back at Eastern Washington, his name escapes me, got hurt in the quarterfinal playoff game. I don't know if that's really the answer. I mean, he'll keep them honest. He clearly gains their respect because you wouldn't give a guy the ball that many times if he wasn't at least decent. But I feel like he might do okay in the first and second quarter, possibly. But same old Bison football, different day. You're looking at an individual that's probably going to get very tired and fatigued real quick. So I've just seen it 100 times. These are things that I would look at when I was playing myself, more so obviously on the defensive side in terms of their snap count and how often they were coming off the field. It's just it's going to get taken advantage of. That's what I know.
Yeah, so what you pointed out, I think, is a really important thing, and that's just the disparity between him and the second back. You look at, and not everybody's going to be North Dakota State. Not everybody has four talented, backs or five talented backs, as sometimes is the case with NDSU. But these guys are not really having a second back get involved at all. And like you said, I mean, there's a decent chance that this kid's going to get pretty tired. And the last thing you want against North Dakota State is to be worn down in the fourth quarter, because with Coach Kramer, that the Bison won't be. That's just the way it is. Phoenix just mentioned in that interview, which again was awesome, that Davis has a tendency to play a little bit more man, a little bit more single high. So press, whether it's pressing to cover three or pressing to, cover one with man free, these guys are, 6 feet tall, 5'11", et cetera. They'll get your hands on you. Trev, what are these kids being taught at NDSU as far as beating man coverage and specifically even beating press coverage?
Win with your hands and win at the line of scrimmage. And it's as simple as that. You're talking spring ball was probably the most frustrating time for us receivers when we were playing, because we had to play and go up against a guy named Marcus Williams. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was okay and turned out all right in terms of his football career. And the biggest thing he did is he would beat us with his hands. He was so fast with his hands. There's another guy from Sam Houston State. I know a lot of people remember me for springing a lot of runs, and most of that was because I would win with my hands. Well, there was this I cannot figure out his name. It's actually going to bother me, but his arms were so long and he was so fast with his hands. There was a couple times where he would blow right past me just because he would simply beat me with his hands. But if you can win with your hands right away and stack a guy, you're going to find yourself in a very favorable position to allow number five to find you. So he's going to have his work cut out for him, Lance's, because he's going to start seeing what playoff football looks more like. Once you get into playoff football in December, you're seeing man coverage all day, every day. And that's all we would practice, quite frankly, come elimination time. So those guys are probably doing a lot of hand drills all week and just securing the catch away from their bodies, because you're going to have a lot of one-on-one balls. And if they got guys that are longer with long arms, you have to make sure that you are putting yourself in a position body-wise to put yourself between the man and the ball. So win with the hands, win fast, and win early.
I got to ask, because it's something that I feel like I've noticed, but I want a second set of eyes on this. It seems to me like whether it was Polisek, Vegan before him, even Courtney, were not afraid to run against a nine-man box. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're Packers fans. We've seen Aaron Rodgers. We have seen good quarterbacks come through North Dakota State. We're fans of football. So when we see, I mean, you're a wide receiver, for God's sakes. When we see the corners with no safety help, like, our brains go, all right, go over the top, go over the top, go over the top. And North Dakota State, for years, has just run the ball. and it seems to me that this, whether it's Roll, Hedberg, maybe it comes from the top with Coach Entz, but it seems to me like these shot plays with Sproles, Mathis, and Watson are more often coming. Do you see that as well? Do you see the multiple box defenders, and do you see this staff having more of a willingness to exploit those one-on-one matchups and maybe back those safeties off?
Here's what it comes down to. It's pretty simple. If you have playmakers, you got athletes, you got guys that are extremely talented, and they do. And you'll see that in my midweek thoughts. If you read those tomorrow, for those listening, if you have talented dudes, get them the ball. Period. Was very fortunate enough to play with a guy named John Crockett, extremely talented athlete, and you just had to find ways to get him the ball. Now, he might run the wrong play, and I could reference about five where we scored touchdowns and he ran the wrong play, but he was so good at what he did, you just have to find a way to get the rock in his hands. And that's what you're looking at with Trey being able to throw the ball to Phoenix Rose. It seems like those guys have a very good relationship on and off the field, which is very good for the leadership and the development of the team and program long-term. But even their chemistry on the field, it just seems like they're on the same page at all times. And it's fun to watch because it's kind of like schoolyard football at some point. Just go make a play. At some point, you're a playmaker, you recognize something, be an athlete and go do it. I know it sounds cliche and everyone's like, oh, well, yeah, of course you got to go make plays. Well, you know, it's a lot easier said than done, but if you got a guy that can do it, just do it over and over again. So if you have nine in the box, you have a one-on-one matchup, Phoenix can go in, go do it, whether it's him or Watson or number five just putting the ball in his own hands and evading a couple defenders like he's shown to do. So nine in the box, you still got to win power because that's our bread and butter. And that's kind of what we referenced earlier. That's how you wear teams out. And that's what we train to do all summer and all winter and all through spring ball. So we'd be crazy to get away from that in the fall. But again, if you got guys that are that freakishly talented like they have now, athletic-wise, throw it up and get in the ball.
They've got a freshman, Nick Eaton, with 3.5 sacks, 15 tackles, 2 pass breakups, and 2 forced fumbles. Again, I'm talking about a freshman here. When you got a guy in the front seven that creates that many issues, and I'm guessing that they're running an odd front, and he's probably playing outside linebacker, or maybe he's just an inside linebacker that blitzes a lot. But this guy seems to be a game wrecker. Offensively, how did you guys, you know, like I said, if it's a front seven guy, how did you guys identify a stud and kind of deal with a stud, whether it's a guy like Colin Saunders from Western or Christian Roseboom from South Dakota State, or even got, you know, back when you played, a guy like Colton Underwood or some of the studs that you and I had? How do you game plan around a really good front seven guy on the opposite side?
So it's going to vary. I mean, obviously that's a loaded question. We're not going to be able to figure that out in a 2-minute take here. Two things: you have to attack him. You have to find what he's weak at and attack it and exploit it, because guys like that rely off confidence, and teams try to do it to Marcus all the time. First quarter, we knew it every week. He would know it. Marcus was very, very smart. He's a very smart football player. He knew that people were going to try to attack what he wasn't very good at. So he worked his tail off to try to make up for that. So you do that to try to get them out of the game early mentally. And if it doesn't go your way, then you find ways around it. You have adjustments, and you work on certain plays and packages to combat what they're skilled at. Whether that's zoning them on the front five, or if you got a good pass rush guy, hashtag pass rush guy, Ross, maybe keep running back into pass pro on his side. You just got to find a way to make those adjustments and know where they're at all times. So in this case, you know where 53 is at. He's a fast kid. He's got a pretty good motor. He's going to find a way to make plays, but when he does, you just stop the bleeding as fast as you can. And I think that's what NDSU has been good at. And I think that's why the way Kramer trains those guys is to not get too low in those moments and just keep going to the next play. Because these guys are scholarship athletes too. So as long as we win more than we lose, turn around, look at the scoreboard at the end of the game, and more than likely you're going to have won the game. So attack him. Try to get him tired. Try to get him out of the game mentally. And if that doesn't work, then you got to go a different route. So one defender I don't think will make all the difference. So I think you can keep going at him if it doesn't work in the first or second quarter. But it'll be fun to see another guy and see what he's capable of.
Speaking of hashtag pass rush guy, I had a chance to talk to Brendan Cook. He's a redshirt freshman. I got confused. You and I were talking about, no, I think he's true. Okay, maybe he's a redshirt. God, when did this kid come in? And the reason that we were so confused, and it's something that Matt Entz clarified on Monday, is that Brendan came in as a defensive tackle. He was a 6'3", 6'4" kid that NDSU's talent evaluators said, you know what, if we can get him up to 265 or 270, he's going to be that, you know, Cole Karch type 3 tech that's going to be able to use some of the quickness he had at a defensive end, but we think he's got the frame to hold up inside. That didn't work out. He said he put on a bunch of terrible weight, and we'll get into the interview, obviously. He tells the story a lot better than I do, but said, guys, I need to be a defensive end. He showed that on scout, and then this year made the full-time switch back to end and really made a splash in Delaware. Played just a handful of snaps, was very impactful, was in on a couple of tackles, had an absolutely glorious rip move, taking the offensive tackles, taking the offensive tackles' hands away from him. And when you do that, you make it an easier turn at a corner, an easier corner to turn. And where are you usually at, especially if you're playing the right end? You're probably at the football. And he swiped at that baby, got the combo meal, got the burger and the fries, got the sack and the strip. I just, man, it made my heart so full to watch that rush from Brendan Cook. So, of course, I had to interview him. And here's about 8 minutes with Bison freshman defensive end Brendan Cook right now.
here with Bison redshirt freshman Brandon Cook. Brandon, how are we doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So first kind of game action, right? I mean, this was this your actual first game action?
Yep. First game to the mound.
Okay. So I want to go back kind of to the beginning, and how did you find out about North Dakota State? You're kind of in the recruiting footprint, but sort of on the edge of the recruiting footprint. So how did that all happen?
North Dakota State came up when Coach Kleinerman came to my school. He just showed up one day and was at my weight room and watched me lift. After that, we started talking. I don't really know how fast it started happening, but they told me they were going to start recruiting me if I came to their summer camp. I went to their summer camp. They offered me immediately, and a month later, I committed. It was a done deal. So,
what made it such a done deal? I mean, why was it so attractive to you right away? Why did you know, like, all right, this is a spot?
Yeah, I got to come here. I got to talk to all the coaches. Trey and Phoenix were already committed, so I got to talk to them for a while. Just learn what this whole culture is about. I didn't really know that much about it before I came here and started getting recruited by them. But I don't know. I just loved it. Everything about it, the culture, winning. I don't know. It's just my home. I couldn't imagine myself anywhere else.
I think there was a little bit. I got confused, and I'll admit, because when we're so big into the recruiting with Bias Report and 24/7, and I saw you out there, and I'm like, God, there was another defensive end from that class, and it's because you didn't come in as a defensive end.
Yep.
So Coach Entz talked a little bit about in the press conference that you struggled to hang the weight, and what was that like with talking to Coach Kramer? I'm sure he was a little bit frustrated. I'm sure you were a little bit frustrated, but. You look good, man. I mean, it seems like defensive end might work out.
Yeah. I came in as a 215-pound D-tackle.
Which is not enough.
Yeah, not clearly not enough, no. With Tanner Volson, 305, I was going against him every play on scout team. That just wasn't working. But, I knew from the start I didn't really want to play D-tackle, but I wanted to be a part of this program. So I said, I'll sacrifice not playing D-end, and I'll play D-tackle. I'll do whatever I have to get on the field and play for the Bison. And that's what I was going to do. I put on 45 pounds like they asked me to. I got to 265 in, I think, 4 months. And it just wasn't good weight. It wasn't working out. I wasn't a D-tackle. I'd never played it. I didn't know the technique. It just wasn't natural to me like D-end was. And I played a lot of D-end for the scout team, so they started to notice that I was more fluent at D-end, and they just gave me a shot at the switch, and I lost a little bit of weight, got my quick back, and I don't know, it just hasn't been the same.
Was what, about 240?
Yeah, I'm like 240, 245 right now.
Okay, so what was that nutrition like when you got up to 260? What did they have you doing?
It was the seafood, eat food.
Yeah.
It was just anything that I could put in my mouth, I eat it. I don't really know. I couldn't tell you how much I ate every single day to get up to that weight while still working out and running. And I don't know. I wouldn't ever do it again in my life if I didn't have to.
Sure. What? How much do you guys depend on Coach Buddha and the upperclassmen? Because you're a young group of defensive ends. Obviously, Derek's a fifth-year senior, mm-hmm. probably going to be an All-American. I mean, one of the better defensive tackles I've seen here. But then you look down the line, and it's Logan who's got his redshirt back, so he's a sophomore. And then Tony and Barty and you and just guys that have not played a ton of football. So how much do you lean on the upperclassmen, and how rapidly do you feel like you guys improve?
A lot. We get better every single day. That's what we try and do. We make it a point to get better at one thing every single day. I depend on them a lot. I know that. I switched to D-end right before spring ball, and from the second I switched, I asked them questions every chance I get. I really knew the technique from playing D-end just my whole life, but I didn't know anything about the defense. I didn't know anything about the culture of the ends room, and they teach me every day more and more. So more than just knowing the playbook, knowing sets, like knowing just the X's and O's of football, but they also teach me like running to the ball is the most important thing, getting on piles, doing the little things, trying to get the ball out, and just doing whatever you can get to the quarterback. Like that's just stuff that I wasn't taught growing up. Like I was taught obviously to rush and stuff like that, but like just having a will and a way of getting to the quarterback no matter what, doing whatever you have to make the play. That's what they've installed in me every single day, and I'm going to continue to learn from them every day until they're gone.
I love the chop on your sack this last week. But what is that your favorite, or what move that either an upperclassman or a coach has taught you at NDSU? What's your favorite new pass rush move? Your favorite toy?
That is probably one of my favorites. For speed rush, for sure, that's one of my favorites. Buddha taught me that. It's just nice and easy. Just make sure you hit the hand and you're in the clear. As long as you have that outside hand down, you can reach around, you'll basically get there against most tackles. Our tackles are really good, so yeah. You try that in practice against Dylan Radins or Cordell, they'll just grab you and hold you. But it definitely helps, like, practicing every day against great players. I've tried.
Yeah, because you're not going to find better tackles in the country.
Yeah, I was on scout team for the first 2 weeks of the season because I wasn't dressing, so I was just working on all these different pass rush moves that I could use against, like, Cordell, Dylan Radins, and Zeech, and just seeing what works, what doesn't, and trying to, like, perfect it before I got the chance to do it. And that's just what I felt was most comfortable with.
I want to talk to you about the conversation, and I don't know if it was Coach Buddha, Coach Braun, or Coach Entz. It doesn't really matter, but that had to have been an awesome moment in your life where, I don't know, they come into the locker room or you stop in their office, whatever it is, and they say, hey, by the way, you're traveling to Delaware. Describe that.
My defensive end coach, Buddha, he called me at like 9 o'clock on Sunday. I was just watching the Patriots game, I think, and I was like, I immediately thought that's might have been what it was, but then I also thought it could have been a lot of other things. So I just answered with a honest heart, and he told me, and I was just couldn't be happier. I called my mom immediately. I was like, awesome. Mom, like, I'm playing in Delaware, like, I'm so excited. Like, I'm not going to mess up this opportunity. Like, I'm just going to do everything I can to get back on the field next week and just try to do my 111th.
And so what was that first snap like, and then what was the first sack like?
The first snap, I went out there, and I just wanted to get off as fast as I could and maybe just make something happen just to try and not mess up. But I was trying not to think about not messing up, because that's how you mess up, just – thinking too much about it. And I don't know, I was just, all went so much faster than it does in practice, which I was expecting. But it felt great. I was really excited. I got in on the tackle, but like, it wasn't really like my tackle. I just got in on it. I was really, really excited. And then I didn't really play for the rest of the game until the fourth quarter, really. And then that sack that just came in, I don't know, I couldn't be happier. I got the opportunity, and I don't know.
So what have you guys seen on film from UC Davis, and what are you kind of expecting? I mean, that's a heck of a quarterback.
Yep, yeah, he has a lot of passing yards, we know that. They run a lot of trick plays. From the games I've watched so far, I've seen a lot of, not trick plays, but reverses, screens, tunnel screens, all full line chops, just stuff I haven't seen yet as a defensive end, playing against our offense just through spring ball and summer and fall camp, and not getting in-game experience against full slide and chop blocks and stuff. But I don't know. It looks like a good matchup for us. I like it.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
We want to thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making Brandon available to us, and certainly want to thank Brandon for his time. I thought he did a great job, and I'll be very honest, that was one of the best freshman interviews I've ever done. Sometimes freshmen are quiet or a little bit soft-spoken, not quite comfortable with us extremely intimidating media types, and I thought that Brandon did a really good job. Trev, let's get into it. Keys to the game. What are a couple of things that NDSU needs to take care of to get the dub on Saturday?
Turnovers, stay on the field, and score early. Simple as that. Anytime you have a quarterback that's that good, you have to neutralize him by keeping him off the field. Quickest way you do that is with turnovers, and then you keep the offense on the field. So convert on third down like they have been, get a turnover, score points early, because I do not know if they have the star power to come back.
All right, give me your score prediction.
I'm going to go like a 38-7, All right, Jake Mayer adds about 4 points. I'm going to go 38-21.
All right, yeah, so my keys to this game are pressuring Jake Mayer, preferably with four. But if four doesn't work, dial up some of those blitzes that they sent to Pat Kehoe, because those were awesome. I really enjoyed eight guys combining for seven sacks. That was a lot of fun. And force Mayer to get rid of the ball, because you have tremendous, tremendous defensive backs. James Hendricks likely returning to this game. And the other thing is obvious. And you know what? It plays right into Bison football. And that is run the hell out of the ball, because you take the air out of the ball, Jake Mayer can't have it. If you've got, you know, 38, 39, 40, 41 minutes of time of possession, it's just not enough time for UC Davis to spin it around and stay in the game. I'm going to go with North Dakota State 42, UC Davis 20. Trev, thank you so much for your time this week, buddy. Really appreciated it. Listeners, we really appreciate you, especially if you've made it this far in the podcast. Thanks for sticking with us the entire time. The number one way to support Trevor and I in this venture is to become a VIP member over at Bison Report. We're running two specials right now. We've got 30% off. That is 30, just like your 3-0 Bison. 30% off of a VIP annual subscription right now. And we've also got a monthly deal where we're giving away the first month for $1. The dollar menu, $1 for the first month, $9.99 after that. Cancel anytime. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, for the next month, I am personally giving $5 to Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer, as is our basketball guy, Nate Zastro. We are both going to be donating $5 to the MAC Fund for every new Bison Report subscriber. If you don't feel like subscribing, you still want to join the fight, go straight to my Twitter account, go to my Facebook, just go to the MAC Fund. You'll find it, Google it, whatever, no big deal, and donate. Thank you guys one more time for listening, and go Bison.